remember my birthday party. Church was out on the road. And everything went black.
It's okay now. Are you back?
Back from where?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Yale Smith, and today I'm going solo. Essentially, this is a React podcast, but we're kind of running a couple weeks late on a couple of these movies, or one of these movies. So just to get into it real quick, I saw Pet Sematary about a week and a half ago, and I didn't do a podcast then because I was in the middle of Atlanta Film Festival, which I will have more content on that very soon, but I wanted to get this out of the way since this was a little bit easier and I can do in like a few minutes time. In the second half we'll have of this podcast, we will have a review for Hellboy. Anyway, so Pet Sematary is the new adaptation of Stephen King's very terrifying, very, you know, bigly, you know, discussed book, Pet Sematary. And I have not read the book, unfortunately. However, this is my first introduction to Pet Sematary anything since I have not seen since I have not seen Pet Sematary from 1989, I think, and I have not seen its sequel either. So this was my first introduction to anything Pet Sematary, and this was so. If any of you remember my kind of review of it back in 2017, late 2017. I thought it was good, but not amazing. I thought it was a very standard, you know, horror movie with jump scares and relied kind of way too much on, you know, the James Wan style of, you know, holding till blah, and you get the jump scare, and there was a bunch of that for most of the 2 hour and 15 minute runtime. And on top of that, it was very much of a safer story than, you know, what was ultimately depicted in the It novel. And honestly, I feel like Pet Sematary is kind of the same thing. Yes, Pet Sematary has a different end and a very, like, downer ending. However, the whole movie kind of feels, up until the last 5 minutes of the movie, feels very much, you know, a safe, much more malign, much more, it feels like it's trying very hard to balance Stephen King's kind of wackiness, since the novel apparently has a Wendigo monster attached to it, or within its storyline, but also try and ground the supernaturalness of Pet Sematary, which the book and the whole premise of this, you know, of Pet Sematary is, you know, you bury something in the woods and it comes back, and it comes back from the grave, and dead is always better, as the message is. Dead is sometimes
better. Sometimes dead is better.
And this one, I feel like, you know, maybe this should have been, you know, fermented a little bit more, or maybe even more daring, because really until the ending, it feels very much like, okay, this is what I'm expecting. And, you know, same kind of horror, and it feels even, you know, a little bit safer. Now, I'm not like asking, you know, I don't think I'm asking, you know, for, you know, tons of buckets of gore. I don't think I'm asking out of the ordinary. I'm kind of asking for kind of more of a kind of, you know, I guess a Stuart, kind of in the way like a Stuart Gordon film reminiscent of The Reanimator, where I'm like, I kind of love the, you know, where I want more of that Lovecraftian kind of feel to what Pet Sematary's premise kind of goes for, is, you know, what happens when you do bring back the dead? What consequences are there to, you know, bringing back a loved one? What does that do emotionally? The kind of, you know, the horror that comes from, you know, not accepting something that nature intended. And that's kind of the stuff I wish there was more of. You just don't get it, you know, that bonkers kind of ness until the very, very end of the movie, which I still don't think I will spoil, but it's still, you know, it still is a downer, bonkers ending, if that makes any sense. But I still kind of just was, throughout the whole entire movie, just like, yeah, this is all just what I expected. This is all, you know, very studio horror-like. The direction of the movie is still, like, the screenplay of it is actually kind of interesting. Like, as the story does unfold, it gets more crazier. It does allude a lot more towards this house, or this entire property that is haunted, is very much, like, causing the family's, you know, rift in, and also their own, like, anxiety and depression and their own questioning of, you know, their own morale of what they think of death. And it ends in a very profound way with, you know, taking the idea of what would happen if we do not accept death? What would happen if we carried on forward with the idea that we don't want the people we love to die? We can't accept death in our, you know, reality. And it does take the concept. It's just, it's done in the mundane way. It's done in the most studio-tested, mundane way imaginable. So, while I still like the movie, I still give the credit to everyone involved for making a competently well-made horror film that I enjoyed for an hour and 45 minutes. At the end of the day, I'm just like, it was fine, it was good. It was a good, nice hour and 40 minutes to kill. I paid only $5 to watch the movie, and it was a $5 movie. So yeah, I'm giving a mild pass to Pet Sematary. It's a fine movie. Some people will, you know, not like the downer ending. To me, the downer ending works because it works, you know, towards the idea of what the movie is trying to say. But yeah, I thought it was just fine.
If you've done something, Lewis, it's not too late to undo it.
Now on to Hellboy.
Yay.
They warned us that something was coming.
If there is ever an end in this forever war, it will be because of you and your strong right hand.
I'm on your side!
Sorry, my bad.
We're the line in the sand. We fight against the forces of darkness.
This is the Earth.
We're expecting a sign that says secret headquarters.
Oi. I need some ID, love.
Are you serious?
So, about 3 years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a summit between Mike Magnolia, the creator of Hellboy, Ron Perlman, the star of Guillermo del Toro's Hellboy movies, and of course Guillermo del Toro, to discuss the future of Hellboy and to see if there was any chance that a Hellboy 3 could ever, you know, see the light of day, since Hellboy was not a huge hit, but it did, you know, become a big DVD rental seller, In the mid-2000s when DVDs were at their height and when, you know, DVD sales really did, you know, matter. And then Hellboy 2 also bigger hit, but also did very well internationally, but was also kind of sandwiched into Will Smith's Hancock and, of course, Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight when it came out in mid-July. So years and years later, but before Del Toro's Oscar win, they had a summit to see if there was any chance they could do a Hellboy 3, you know, get it made and get it done in the way that, you know, would be done on a budget, and also to see if there was any, you know, way forward for them to go. And there was a way, Guillermo del Toro had a pitch for the third movie. However, it would have cost way too much. The last-ditch effort of a Hellboy 3 was early 2010s when Legendary had picked up Pacific Rim, and del Toro had pitched it to Thomas Tull, the head of Legendary at the time. And unfortunately, Thomas Tull loved the idea, but it was just too expensive to do for even the company to do. And this was the company that was investing $190 million in Guillermo del Toro's original robots versus giant alien kaiju monster movie, Pacific Rim. So, if that gives you any indication. And so after that, Mike Mignola just said, I have to do something with the property. You know, something has to be done, you know, to keep the kind of, you know, popularity going. So Mike Mignola took the Hellboy movie rights and gave them to Millennium Media. And they said, we're going to make a $50 billion R-rated movie in the style of Deadpool with violence and language and yada yada yada. And cut to April 2009, we are presented with Neil Marshall's Hellboy, and it's R-rated. There, Hellboy does say fuck and a bunch of other cuss words, and everybody else says a bunch of cuss words, and then there's a lot of blood, gore, intestines are spewing all over the screen. But the movie itself, not that good. I think it's already been kind of clear that the new Hellboy movie isn't good at all. It's kind of a disaster. But in my opinion, it's not in a disaster in that it's not like Van Forstick, where Van Forstick was just kind of boring bad for the most part until like the last 10 minutes when they actually decided to do a fight scene at the end where it climaxed. Hellboy is the kind of bad where, you know, it feels like everyone was excited by all the visuals, all the monsters they were going to create, all of the, you know, gore and spectacle they were going to create, but they forgot to do a story. So at the last minute, they wrote the script just before production and then just went with what they got. And what we got is a movie that has an opening that really does nothing or really has nothing congruent to the story. It has characters, especially the main character, that doesn't really have an established want or need, which is a basic need for a movie, for any screenplay. And it has a villain that's also got, you know, very boring goals and priorities. And despite that being, you can tell Neil Marshall was having a lot of fun making this. I mean, you know, much like what I said in Pet Sematary, there is a Lovecraftian kind of feel to these two movies. But it's all within the imagery, and that's pretty much it. There are no, like, themes or anything representative within the imagery, so it's just imagery that is evocative and very shocking. But that's all there is. That's all there is. And that's really kind of the best way to say about Hellboy is, yes, it's R, it's gory, it's violent, and there are horror elements, especially in its kind of, you know, reminiscent of Hammer horror films. But in a way, that's kind of the problem with Hellboy, is that's all there is. It gives you a lot of promise. It gives you a lot of interesting things. Things that are sellable. Things that, you know, would go great with a pitch. And it meets the requirements of those. But there's nothing, you know, behind all that. There's nothing behind all these excuses. There's nothing behind anything that, you know, anything that's being offered. And that's really the problem with Hellboy, is that it gives you a lot of great potential. It gives you a lot of, you know, goofy, campy horror. But that's it. It's not fun. It's not fun not because you're disgusted by it all, but because you're overloaded with, you know, your senses are overloaded with everything that you know they're throwing at you. I mean, on top of, you know, there's an extremely violent scene in the movie where Hellboy gets like betrayed by these like giant troll hunters, and as they're like electrocuting him, stabbing him, and you know, very violently attacking Hellboy, you get this like guitar, this loud, poorly mixed guitar riffs that are blaring in, you know, in a theater. And so on top of, like, you know, the disturbing nature of it, your senses are overloaded with this overly loud guitar riffs. And I think that's kind of the whole thesis of the movie, is there's a lot of overdoing, a lot of overproduced. I mean, for a $50 million movie, to kind of, you know, to go on the good side, it looks pretty good. Like, for a $50 million, for what would be a $50 million movie, they have a lot of CGI, a lot of stuff that, you know, normally you would think, oh my gosh, this must have cost like, you know, $100 million. But no, it's, you know, $50 million. And yeah, it doesn't look all that amazing, but it's still like passable. Like all these creature designs, all these trolls, everything, like, you know, like you can tell, like Neil Marshall, like you can feel Neil Marshall through this whole movie, but normally in Neil Marshall's work, there is, you know, a sense of story. There's a sense of, you know, there's more going on than just, you know, heavy visuals, you know, the metal, the heavy metal aesthetic, or even the Lovecraftian part of it. So in a way, this feels like a massive disappointment if you're a Neil Marshall fan. Or if you're just a film buff in general, this is an overall disappointment. And you just can't help watching the whole movie thinking, what would have been Hellboy 3? I know that's, you know, not the right way to praise a movie, but, I mean, that's really kind of the problem is, you know, you guys made another Hellboy movie. Congratulations. Hellboy's in it. And David Harbour is doing his absolute best with what he's given. But at the end of the day, you're just like, so what was the point? There's nothing behind anything. You basically just made a $50 million movie that's trying to sell a franchise, but didn't, you know, present anything other than, you know, what was supposed to be a pitch. So it's not, so honestly, I don't think Hellboy was that worth it. It is, to me, my least favorite movie of the year, probably my worst, or the worst movie I've seen this year. It is not good at all, and I highly don't recommend watching it. Don't waste time. Don't even waste, you know, the $5 to see it. it's just not a good movie. I found this so ugly to look at and profoundly just, I couldn't believe, again, we have more, another superhero movie just reeking of problems. And yeah, I thought it was just not good. Not good at all.
You made me a damn weapon. I just wanted to help you become the best you.
Some dads get their kids Legos.
Haven't we got to be saving the world or something?
Does it do anything special?
Yeah. It smashes things real good.
All right, that is it for the Youth Critic podcast this week. I will have more Atlanta Film Festival 2019 coverage coming out in the next couple days. And obviously, we'll have some more stuff coming out next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow this show at The Youth Critic. And then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you very soon.
You are mankind's best and only hope.
I thought we were supposed to be fighting monsters, not working with them.
Who you calling monster, pal? You look in the mirror recently?
He's an asshole.
Sorry, I interrupt.
On the contrary, you've arrived just in time.